I had a big interest in spirituality, but like a lot of people who came from a Catholic background in Ireland, and growing up, particularly as a teenager in the 80s, I would have cut my teeth politically in opposition to the Catholic Church as being the cause of all bad in Ireland. So, you know, all through my 20s and 30s particularly, I would have had a great interest, like a lot of people, again. I mean, you realize, you think you're so individual, you realize you're part of a trend sometimes. I would have taken a lot of interest in Eastern stuff, Zen Buddhism in particular, being the attractive face, or the most attractive face of Buddhism in the West. And looking for that elusive thing, you know, called happiness, and sort of a sense of meaning, and all of that sort of thing. And so, yeah, that was my very broad background.
I suppose, as you say, like a lot of people, that was a trend to go from a very rigorous, disciplined structure of religion to going to, well, I have a general interest in spirituality, but I don't really want to commit full time to something.
I'd say it's very common. You know, I'd say it's very common. And again, you get the thing of people saying, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious, which can be brilliant, or it can be extremely frivolous, because it's one of the easiest throwaway marks you can make about it. It sort of absolves you of all, you know, having to make any sort of a decision. But yeah, coming back to what you were saying there, I mean, the type of religious belief you had in Ireland growing up was, as long as it looked like you were going to Mass on a Sunday, and as long as it looked like you were superficially conforming, it didn't really matter what was on your heart. Now, that's a generalization, of course. You know, who am I, who are you to judge anyone's heart? But there was certainly, I think, a lot of people would agree that there was a lot of surface observance. I can remember, for example, and this sort of links in with what happened afterwards, going to Mass, I can remember one of my favorite parts of the Mass was the sermon, just because it wasn't a repetition of what I'd heard the previous Sunday, or, you know, it was a bit more interesting, a bit more relevant. But I do recall a lot of people would refer to a good priest as being the guy who gave a nice short sermon. So there was a strange ambiguity in Ireland. As long as you went through the motions of the very predictable structure of the Mass, they didn't want to hear much about the sermon.
We had similarly a priest who could, you know, say Mass in 15 minutes, and he was the priest that everybody wanted.
Those Masses would often be full. Like they'd figure out somehow, which priest was going to be saying Mass in that particular. And they were the good Masses. They were the good priests, good and quick. I mean, the church service I go to now, St. Catherine's Church on Thomas Street, I think you go in, I mean, it's about 2.5 hours or something. It's like, maybe not 2.5 hours, but it's certainly, like, it starts at 11. People always arrive, it's quite casual. People arrive in dribs and drabs. There's a bit of, you know, praying. Then there's like a bit of music. Then there's preaching. It goes on for at least 2 hours, you know. And then there's coffee and tea afterwards. So you often, if you arrive at 10:45, you might not leave until about 1:30 or 1:45, which is, it couldn't be more different to this thing of the 20-minute Mass, you know, with the, you know, the Father Brendan sort of doesn't really spend too much time going on, you know.
How did you get to the stage where you're rebelling against all organized religion to now going to your Mass that's like lasting over 2 hours, that pretty much takes up all of your Sunday morning?
Well, I'll say two things. First of all, rebelling and kicking against things, I think, continues to be part of my nature. I think it's a good thing. I mean, to the extent to which Christianity has become something of a minority interest, perhaps in a way, it's that worries me a little bit. That part of the attraction of it was because it was such a, you know,
it's counterculture now.
It's countercultural now, you know, which is, that's just the way it's happened at this particular moment of history. But how did it happen? Well, a number of different things. Now, so let's talk about the Alpha Course. The Alpha Course is an introduction to Christianity. It's supposed to be for people who are seeking to learn more about Christianity. I have found in my experience most of the people on the course tend to be Christians already. And this is something Christians often forget, is how much, you know, Christians who've been Christian for 30 years still need some sort of focus, or they begin to waver or drift, or you get the atheists and the agnostics, and it's really very much aimed at that type of person. And it's an introduction to Christianity over a few weeks. There's usually a video by Nicky Gumbel himself talking about, or other people sometimes, talking about different themes, such as the Bible, prayer, who was Jesus, a very basic sort of introduction to Christianity. And then there's a discussion group afterwards, and this goes on for, I think, 8 or 9 weeks. And then there's a Saturday, which I actually didn't go to in my course. I was working that weekend, but there's a Saturday, sort of a day-long session on one Saturday. I was aware of I was always interested in these things over the years. I'd heard about it years and years ago, somewhere along the line. I'd been living in Kilmainham for about 1.5 years, and I was coming into town along Thomas Street, and St. Catherine's Church on Thomas Street had banners outside, a big plastic not plastic, one of those things stuck to the, tied to the railing saying Alpha Course beginning in January. And there was an email address, so I decided out of curiosity, I would really, this would be really interesting. And I decided to go and do, sign up for the course. And I think my first thing was curiosity. I mean, there was a deep yearning for something else, but on the surface, what I told myself was curiosity. When I started going as well, I think I had a bit of a sense that it was going to be a bit of a laugh. And I was looking forward to telling people I knew about the Crazy Christians. I was looking forward to getting some stories about that I could work into my conversations, and it would be great crack and very funny to talk about. But a huge part of the Alpha Course is the people you meet, not just in your group, but just beforehand or afterwards or during the coffee break. But I began doing the course, and to my anger and surprise, I found that I was the only agnostic stroke tending towards atheism in the group, in the discussion group I found myself in, which I wasn't expecting. And I began to refer to myself as the token agnostic or the resident agnostic, because everybody else there was more or less Christian and talking about. That was annoying, but I stuck with it, and I went back every Monday. The leader of my discussion group, by pure chance, was the minister of the church itself. And as the course developed, a couple of things happened where I can remember one particular moment where Craig, who was the discussion leader in the course, said something like, you know, and so we were talking about a certain issue, and he said, what do you think, Donal, as the sort of resident atheist? And I described myself as being, well, speaking as the resident agnostic sort of character, and I realized I was actually lying. That wasn't the case. And to deny otherwise would be to kick against it. Now, this is important, because I think faith involves free will, and free will is crucial to Christianity. I mean, compared to a lot of other belief systems, it's really, really important. But there's this delicate dance with a God's an all-powerful God, an all-powerful personal God. And you reach a point where you decide yes or no. I mean, there are very few things in life. Most areas of life are pretty grey. This is one of the areas in which it's not that grey. But the Christian faith, which is an historical faith, which is you either believe or you don't believe that God became incarnate in Jesus Christ 2,000 years ago, roughly. You either believe that or you don't. So you've no choice over that. And I found that very compelling, this idea of it's something outside of yourself. Gradually, over time, I came to a decision to come to faith. And you don't just do that. That needs to be public. You need to make a point of doing that. So on Easter Sunday in 2013, when the Alpha Course had finished, this was March 31st, and I went to church and decided to come to faith.
How did you feel about that? Did you feel like that was quite a dramatic moment, or did you think, well, I can, you know, change my mind in a week's time, or I can change my mind in a year's time?
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, yes and yes. Yes, it was dramatic. Yes, of course. There's always an opt-out clause. I mean, that's the nature of the human condition. We're messy, broken, prone to changing our mind about things. So, of course, you know, I mean, but deep down, it didn't feel like that. I mean, I think one of the things about being older is that you become ever more conscious of the importance of decisions you make, as distinct from, so that whole thing of everything being a bit of a rehearsal, that you can sort of, if it doesn't work out, Asher, I'll try someone else, or, you know, you become more aware of how that's not a very feasible way of going about things. So yeah, it was incredibly dramatic. Of course it was. I mean, it's probably the biggest decision I think you could make in your life. I mean, everything else pales in comparison, but everything else becomes enhanced in comparison as well, because you are, I believe, and a lot of other people would believe too, worshipping something. I think we're built to worship, you know. So most, you know, see, so you worship physicality or sensual pleasure, you worship money, you worship, or you decide to worship God.
So in a way, you sense that you can't really take worship out of the human condition.
No, everything is connected. No, it's not something you just do on a Sunday and it's just part of your, like a pastime. No, absolutely not. I mean, again, I don't want to judge people who do that. I mean, everybody, who knows what's going on in a person's heart? Everybody is different. To answer the second part of the question, did I think it was something you could just change your mind about? Of course. I mean, you always think that. I mean, that's every area of life. But I didn't really have that as a, you know, I'm old enough now. I was 43 at the time, and I'm 46 now. Maturity is to mean anything. If you're to learn anything from life, you learn the importance of the seriousness of the decisions you make. Doubts are part of the human condition, and I had lots of queries, but a lot of those doubts were more to do with technicalities and details to do with the church I was becoming a member of. I don't know enough about theology to say this, but I would, yeah, theological details. I can recall once, about 2 or 3 months into going, maybe not even 3 months, maybe a month and a half into going to church, and it crossing my mind, what would it be like to turn back again and go back out, in a sense? And my sense was it would be like, you know, having found, you know, shelter it would be like going out into a barren landscape, naked, and exposing yourself to all of that, but running around and jumping up and down in an attempt to make yourself feel better about it. And that's what it would have felt like. So in that sense, not because of some external imposition, but just because intrinsically that just wasn't an option. I think I had too much of an experience of faith, both in my own self, but also through my contact with other people. It is a choice, but it's a choice to accept what is true.